Welcome everybody this week to the Jacobson's Market Intelligence Report. Hope everybody's doing safe and hanging in there. We have an exciting week here at the Jacobson. We are building in some forecasts that we've been talking about updating in past weeks here. So as we're starting to see signs of markets beginning to open up, we are going to begin to introduce our analysis based on taking in obviously different inputs and reference points on the beginnings of forecasting less demand and utilization of our feedstocks through the fuel programs of RFS2 and the LCFS programs. So to jump right in there and begin to talk about that specifically, I'm going to go to Ryan in the distilled corn oil story.
Thanks, John. And so as you can see here in this chart, the distiller's price, or corn oil price, we're forecasting it to drop over the next several months. And the main reason for that is corn oil falling more in line to soybean oil. We saw in the near term buyers scrambling to get coverage. You have specific diet needs, and the reformulations hadn't kicked in yet. We're starting to see that, although spot availability is incredibly limited. Some of the long positions have been worked through as well, which is going to allow for greater spot sales or spot volume in May, and that's what we think will be the catalyst for this downturn. If you can, George, go to the chart with the relative pricing to soybean oil. There you can see in April it was 110% of the price of nearby soybean oil. And with cash soybean oil prices trading as low as 24 cents FOB Midwest, it doesn't make sense for anybody to pay over 30 cents for distillers corn oil. In the long term, we expect this pattern to hold, that buyers will weigh their price or their buying decisions based on replacement values, and the main replacement product is going to be soybean oil, and again, that's going to set a cap on prices. In the LCFS credit scheme, it doesn't make sense for corn oil to trade more than 3 to 4 cents over soybean oil, and we're seeing bids into June at 30 cents into the Gulf, which would indicate a 25 to 26 cent FOB value from the Midwest. Unlike the chemical industry where they need, you know, stearic and oleic acid, it's really just a lipid ingredient in feed diets for the all veg birds or for biodiesel and renewable diesel production. Something to keep an eye on for the second half of the year is an overall demand contraction from the feed side. There is potential or there is risk for lower numbers throughout the year tied to COVID-19 changes. If production, let's say social distancing guidelines are implemented in some of the processing plants, we could see slower run times, which would lead to an overall decrease in the size of the bird flock that's going to end up going through processing facilities, and that would lower overall demand as well and could create some further corrections to the downside. With that, I'll throw it back to you, John.
Thanks a lot, Ryan. And I think, you know, that illustrates, those lower DCO illustrates, you know, some of the cause and effects that we're running into as this is all playing out across these markets where, you know, we're thinking some of these lower CI products may be in more demand. They may spike because of fuel programs, but it's really interesting to continue to watch how these markets absorb this this development. In the biodiesel space, I think I'll jump in a little bit here on the biomass-based diesel space to touch on that. We are including now some new estimates to our forecast that obviously reduce the consumption or the utilization of gasoline and diesel, and that then trickles down through the RFS2 program. In the past week, though, the biomass-based diesel suffered another, what I would argue from the producer side, a challenging week with the big move in the energy sector and in crude oil eventually finding its way down to the diesel side and that heating oil benchmark that we use in the BOHO spread. So that BOHO spread is now up in the above $1.20 to $1.20 range, which is a significant headwind to producers of biodiesel and renewable diesel, as we've been pointing out in our gross processing margins across past weeks. But this latest move this past week, another full 10 to 15 cent jump north, that effectively would require RINs to move about 10 cents north to compensate. And of course, RINs have not, because RINs in their own right, the D4 RIN, George, maybe we can pop over to that, are stuck between this sort of structural pull by the boho to perform and to go higher, but are being dragged back by obviously threats of waivers, but mainly the very realistic threats that there's going to be lower volumes of gasoline and diesel moving through the U.S. market in 2020, thus triggering a lower renewable volume obligation for the RFS too. And with those numbers, actually, I'd like to pop it over to Tori. And Tori, if you could take us through how we're reworking that into our sort of EMTS figures, that would be fantastic.
Sure. Thanks, John. So the changes we made, and this is actually the third iteration of an attempt to try to quantify the impact of the pandemic on biofuel production in the U.S. and I guess maybe more specifically under the EMTS regime. And the way that we've sort of changed over this period while we're trying to understand this is our initial cut was kind of a sharp drop off initially, and then we balanced that out at the end of the year so that the overall production for the year didn't really change. Our second iteration was just an across the board cut for the entire year. And now what we've done is we've gone in and we've estimated a monthly change from the mandate to give us a more granular look at the impact of the pandemic on biofuel production under the EMTS program. And so in general, what the shape of the cuts are kind of a peak in the reduction over the next couple of months, and then demand slowly coming back and reaching for most cases the prior levels or the mandated levels in the second quarter of 2021 at the latest. We looked at four different fuel categories. We looked at gasoline, which translates to ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel, and then jet fuel. Jet fuel is obviously the one that recovers the slowest, and it remains below the mandated levels throughout the entire forecast period, which ends in December 2021. The impact of the changes was a reduction in fuel production for all fuel types under the D4 fuel category of 19 million gallons over the balance of 2020, and then a reduction of 59 million gallons for 2021. D5 output fell by 14 million gallons for 2020 and 51 million gallons for 2021. And then D6 fell by 3 billion gallons for 2020 and rose actually by 4 million gallons for 2021. To take it down one level further, our forecast for domestic biodiesel production fell by 37 million gallons for 2020. But rose by 56 million gallons for 2021. We're projecting that total domestic biodiesel production in 2020 will be 1.87 billion gallons and 1.84 billion gallons in 2021. For renewable diesel, output declined 12 million gallons in 2020, but is expected to increase by 21 million gallons for 2021. And with that, I'll send it back to you, John.
Fantastic, Tori. And that's perfect to begin to explain how we've been talking about our assumptions that this will obviously greatly affect RFS too. However, for certain products in the biomass-based diesel realm, namely renewable diesel, as we enter into markets like specifically California or the LCFS realm, things look a bit different in that cost curve scenario. So Apologies, George, I was jumping all over there. But if we go to the gross processing monitor, I just want to kind of tie that all in. We've continued to talk about this snapshot of the market that we look at with the gross processing margin, which takes a gallon of biodiesel, low CI biodiesel, and a gallon of renewable diesel, and sells those into the California markets. And it's an economic analysis of those two streams. Obviously, we've continued to tell that supply-demand story of renewable diesel. It gets a lot more for the producer in that market. But what we're really looking at here is just what production economics in those markets look like. They continue to be, if you look on the on the right-hand side, very challenging for the biodiesel space. So we see challenging economics. We see biodiesel producers continue to be a bit on the sideline of that market. And unfortunately, not a ton of hope is what we're hearing coming, as we've got lower demand for that fuel likely coming for the remainder of the year from COVID. Renewable diesel story, though, as you can see, a little bit different. Those producers still incentivized to ship, produce into that California market. We anticipate it may maintain for the remainder of the year, but let's check in with Bob and make certain we're still there.
Thanks, Jan. We are. You hit it right on the head with biodiesel going into California or being produced in California and trying to be sold there. Got reports from producers that they're basically giving away their biodiesel in order to collect the credits. I've heard biodiesel selling that. So who knows? It's a very tough environment there. We've seen LCFS credits stabilize to a good degree. The volume had been really high the past 3 or 4 weeks. Over the past week, credit volume subsided a bit. It's down to a little over 300,000 credits, I think, during the past week. And that's down from 600,000 to 900,000 the weeks preceding. So while credit volume is still high, relatively speaking, it's gone down a bit. Market's still trying to work itself out. It's, the LCFS there is kind of broken into two segments, gasoline and diesel. The gasoline segment is where you see the majority of the deficits in the program generated. With the pandemic in place, gasoline demand has been hit a lot harder than diesel demand. Therefore, those deficits aren't being generated as much as they were. I think going into the year, we were looking at a 9 to 10 million metric ton deficit generation on the gasoline side. On the diesel side, we're looking at 7 million credit generation. So we were looking at about, I think, a net of 2.5 million deficits being created relative to credits. And given the impact of what's going on with gasoline and diesel, we're seeing deficits being drawn down more than what we're seeing with credits. So that's easing prices on the LCFS credit, and not exactly a bad thing to be happening at this point in time. They're not going to be lowering credit prices down to where it doesn't incentivize further production, but again, not a bad thing. So John, I'll kick it back to you.
Great. No. So we expect steady demand from that renewable diesel market, and that's going to continue to put that pressure on the low CI feedstocks. So now the last thing we weren't going to cover here today, this week, is going to be the soybean oil. And we put that at the last with Tori because it's kind of become the catch-all, right? As we see these low CI feedstocks kind of ebb and flow around very specific granular instances, some of the closures, we've sat back with soybean oil effectively being the catch-all. The question is if and when now. So, Tori, what do you think? What's the latest there?
Thanks, John. So I think in general, to sort of answer that question, we haven't made big changes to our non-biofuel demand, and in part because of this idea that some of the other vegetable oils are going to be in short supply, and soybean oil is the logical feedstock or the logical vegetable oil to fill up those deficits. However, on the biofuel side, we ran the numbers through that we talked about in the biofuel section through the model, and that reduced biofuel demand or soybean oil demand for biodiesel by 120 million pounds over the balance of the 1920 marketing year to 7.52 billion for the year. That's 180 million pounds below USDA's April projection of 7.7 billion pounds. For 2021, the soybean oil usage for biodiesel is 7.9 billion pounds, and that was 100 million pounds above our previous forecast. The changes left our 1920 forecast 343 million pounds below the 7.86 billion pounds that were used in 18 and 19. The forecast implies that average monthly soybean oil used in biodiesel production will be 685 million pounds over the balance of 1920 and 659 million pounds for 2021. For renewable diesel, the changes reduced demand by 18 million pounds over the balance of 1920, but raised it by 12 million pounds over 2021. The average monthly usage for renewable diesel is going to be 91 million pounds for 1920 and 107 million pounds for 2021. And that leaves our forecast for soybean oil used in renewable diesel production for 1920 at 1.09 billion pounds, and then for 2021 at 1.28 billion pounds. As we get more information about the deficits in the other vegetable oils, we'll make further modifications to that non-biofuel side. But for the biofuel side, we expect, you know, biodiesel, the drop in biodiesel production to kind of take soybean oil down, even as some of the other feedstocks fall short. With that, I'll send it back to you, John.
Yeah, no, and that's excellent to point out that obviously as we're trying to assimilate some of these forecasts in, it's a delicate balance to what may happen versus what is happening. So, okay, George, let's jump into the questions then. I know people generally are having quite a few, so let's dive in there.
Sure thing, John. The first question we really have is for Bob. What's going on with Canada's clean fuel program?
So late last week, Friday, I believe, Canada announced that they're going to delay the proposed regulations for the liquid fuel side of their program. Canada's program's a little different than everyone else's, including California, Oregon, British Columbia. They have separate requirements for liquid, gas, and solid fuels. Program's in development. It's not in place yet. They've proposed that. They've delayed proposed regulations due to the pandemic. However, that doesn't push their overall schedule off track. Instead of releasing them now, they plan on releasing them in the fall. The final regulations are expected to be put in place in 2021 and then be enforced in 2022. So while delayed, it's not delaying the whole program.
All right. Thank you, Bob. This question is probably for you, Cusick. With the hobo spread continuing to move higher, do you foresee additional capacity losses beyond what we've already incurred?
So I think the question is, will capacity come up? So there's a few good answers to that. So one thing is, I think the more, you know, marginal, It's unfortunately the smaller players, probably with less depth in financing, that have had to kind of shut down first. That's what we've seen over the years, biomass-based diesel producers. And so I think the answer on that is that there is some tax credit money that's arriving in the past couple of weeks. So that could create a little surge in buying from these smaller buyers. So we may see a little bit of smaller, but the problem is the headwinds are the economics right now. So it's very challenging for biomass-based diesel, very difficult environment to come back up and surge production into, as Bob and I were just talking about in the hobo and the different biomass-based diesel market analysis. So it could be a very challenging climate to come up in biomass-based diesel. Renewable diesel, most of that capacity is running, and there's not small players. So challenging environment, certainly in the biodiesel market. There is, again, that tax credit money has been reportedly kind of coming into companies across the last couple of weeks. So that could create a little bit of extra surge in buying, but again, into very difficult headwinds.
Okay, thanks, John. Ryan, when do you expect ethanol and corn production to pick back up?
You know, I suppose it's going to be a lag. It just depends on when the U.S. governors open, you know, the or lift the shelter-in-place restrictions and people are out driving around more. I mean, it's going to be a lag behind gasoline demand because there's so much ethanol in storage at present. You know, it could be, and I just heard a report yesterday that two of the largest ethanol facilities in the U.S., I think it was a collective 600 million gallons of production on an annual basis, furloughed the employees at the plants for 4 months. So it could be late Q3, Q4 before we start to see levels comparable to 2019. So it's a gradual pickup, but not until we see these the economy reopen and people obviously start to drive around more and some of that supply get worked through.
Yeah, I'd jump on to that real quick to just say I agree. I think, you know, with the ethanol, what I'm hearing on the ethanol side is there's a lot of products still out there that they weren't totally reactive and shutting down and slowing down, as were a lot of people, because it was a challenging, quickly changing environment. And so, right, we could see some of those closures. We're also hearing a lot about potential distressed assets and assets not coming back up. So that seems to be a reality in that space as well.
All right, thanks, guys. Tori, this one's for you. What will it take to drive soybean oil prices higher?
I think so. There's probably a couple of answers to this question. While the correlation to soybean or to crude oil isn't 100%, higher crude prices obviously would help. I think we probably are in a situation where, as we've kind of talked about, we don't see huge cuts in demand. I mean, the change in the biodiesel demand is substantial, but it's not a huge cut. And we don't see much of a cut on the non-biofuel side. I don't think the market is pricing that in right now. Soybean oil has fallen down to 25 cents for the July contract. And Ryan talked about some of the cash prices earlier. So I think it's probably going to be a realization by market participants that soybean oil demand actually isn't as weak as you might think if you're just paying attention to the biofuel industry. It's tough to say when that'll happen. I think that probably we've gotten an increase in ending stocks forecasts over the past month or so, and we've increased our ending stocks forecast over the past month or so. So there's that part being priced in, but even at the levels that we're forecasting, prices have been higher with bigger stocks, and certainly probably higher stocks to usage ratios than we're expecting. And so I think it will happen. I think it's just a question of how long it takes market participants to realize what's actually going on in the market and with demand.
Thank you, Tori. Tori, I want to stick with you on this one. What were the monthly changes you used in your model back in the biofuel section?
So in the biofuel section, in general, we, and I apologize for looking away. Let me pull that up. I thought I had it open and I closed it.
George, maybe I'll just chime in while you're doing it. We are going to put together something a little bit better visually for everybody next week that kind of shows our adjustments in support of what Tori is looking for.
All right. So in general, what we have is demand, the reduction in demand peaking over the next 2 months. And for gasoline, that's about a 50% cut. For biodiesel and renewable diesel, it's about a 5% cut. And for jet fuel, it's about, call it an average 55% cut. From there, we kind of have a slow reduction in the amount of demand that is cut. For gasoline, it kind of goes 50-40, and then we're back to even by December. and then we're kind of flat from there. For biodiesel, the recovery is a little bit slower, and so we kind of go in a line from 5 to 2.5, and then we're ultimately even by April of 2021, and then we actually go above about 5% over the balance of 2021. Renewable diesel looks very similar to that. For jet fuel, we're down, like I said, 55% over the next couple of months, and then we kind of crawl back to roughly 10% below pre-COVID levels by February 2021 and kind of stay at that level through the end of the forecast period.
All right. Thank you, Tori. Last question. I suppose this could be Bob or John. Is there anything new on the RFS2 waivers?
Didn't hear about anything this week. In addition to the kind of a couple of mainstream media announcements and the sort of governor's coalition that started to come together about 10 days ago. Bob, did you hear pick up anything this last week?
No, the only thing I could add in addition to that was I think there was something coming out, you know, how the gallons were supposed to be rolled back in for previous waivers. I did hear that they're looking to try to cut those off so that doesn't get added back in. So, but nothing on new waivers.
Yeah, so just to point out, this was attempted, I believe, the General Waiver Authority was attempted once prior a few years ago based on different situation, drought conditions. But I think the similar set of governors actually approached it. And, you know, the key to the RFS2 program is that it is dynamic. So if there's less gasoline and diesel moving into it, less biofuels are required. So I would argue it should be able to compensate what's going on. The program was built to do so. And thus, you know, the circumstance for the General Waiver Authority for this could be argued because the program is built to absorb this by applying the percentage RVOs versus any type of static numbers to the situation.
That's the last question from me. John, go back to you.
Sorry, I missed that last one.
We're done with questions, John.
Okay. Well, I think that's it then for the week. Wanted to just tie up that as we begin these sort of forecasts, we'll try to begin to put together a visual when we're making significant changes. Obviously, the market intelligence report that we're talking about in this webinar will illustrate those, and that's the driver to our webinar. So make certain you tune into that because there is just a treasure trove of information in there. Hoping everybody has a really safe and good week out there. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, everybody.